This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon and welcome to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are live at the Beacon Building, 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester. You are listening to The Pulse 107.7. You can also stream us live on the World Wide Web at WTPLFM.com. It is a gorgeous summer day out there today. It is still summer. It's not officially over.
Next Wednesday.
That's right. So it's not officially over. And you know, I thought today was going to be a little cooler. That's why I have this sweater on. It is a light sweater, but I'm a little roasting.
It's a nice color, a nice peach color. I like that.
Thank you. Very nice. Thank you.
I'm surprised I can actually discern that because I had an eye exam this morning. So my pupils are
wildly dilated.
So not too much blink today, Carol, because I don't think I could take it. I had to wear sunglasses all over the place.
I know.
And of course, I booked this appointment a year ago before I knew I'd be joining you. It was a 9:30 appointment. Out of there at 10:30, it should start to get better, and it is, but I was getting freaked out because I can't read much on my phone, you know, and it's like, you know how that is. If you can't connect with your phone, what's the point of living?
True, right? What the heck would we do without our phones? My gosh.
For sure. Hey, where's our beer guy?
He said he was parking.
Oh, he did. Okay, so yeah, he's Michael Hopley-Pierce. He's always... in advance, he's way over the top prompt. I mean, he's always here on time. He usually has guests. He's all prepared. So I get nervous if at 12:13 I don't see any sign of him. But he is now.
He texted just a few minutes. Oh, look at him! Oh, he's all business too. Look at him.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Yikes! He's like flying in here, and he's very serious.
He's a whirling dervish. That man is for sure.
Funny.
Shall I whirl?
I'd rather you dervished. But so I have to tell you, I had an interesting. Well, viewed a couple interesting things at Market Basket. Today, before I came in,
Market Basket.
I had a few minutes to kill after getting out of the eye doctor, so I went in and got a couple of things. And I have to hand it to the people that were working the checkout counters that handled two interesting situations pretty well. You know how they have like back to back, you know, or in front of each other checkout lines. They're short for 12 items or fewer.
Unless you're from Massachusetts, and then you can have 30.
Yeah, well, then apparently the guy in front of me was probably from Methuen, right on the border there, because he had about 20. Now, I have to say, generally, checkout people are just too, I hate to say it, wimpy to actually tell people that you have too many items. This woman did tell him, but she was very diplomatic about it, and she did... You know, she did scan it through for him as the line built, but at least she said something.
Yeah.
I'll give her credit for that, because a lot of times, when's the last time you saw a checkout clerk say that, next time, please go
do it?
You never see that because, I don't want to ruffle any feathers, you know?
Well, and I think a lot of people that are working in a checkout probably don't feel like they get paid enough to justify taking that kind of action.
Good point. So I appreciate the fact that she did that. That's one. And then that was the back one. The one in front... There was some customer having some kind of a spirited discussion, and she was holding like a bunch of packs of cigarettes, and I'm thinking, okay, great, so we got to wait for them to go and get all that. So it turns out she's having some discussion, doesn't have enough money, just bolts out of there.
With the cigarettes in hand.
Not all of them, but she left with something. I couldn't tell exactly what it was, so if somebody went chasing after her, ma'am, 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 and the woman would not acknowledge her.
This has to have been Market Basket right here
on
Elm Street.
Yeah.
How did you know?
But again, I'm crediting the people that work there for handling it well, being calm, not getting all crazed, because it was back-to-back episodes. And I was just watching it all unfold. And meanwhile, this poor guy with two sacks of potatoes, he's like 75, he can hardly hold them. He's waiting to get checked out. So we let him come in front of us, being the great guys that we are. So that was my excitement for the morning.
Wow, that's more excitement than decent folks need.
I know. That should last me at least another year. Besides having wildly open pupils from just getting out of
it. I was going to say, there's nothing I like doing more than grocery shopping when I have dilated pupils.
I know. Those neon lights just drive me crazy. So anyway, oh, this is Michael Hopley Pierce.
Hey, hi, Eric Stratton, this, chairman. Glad to meet you.
This is pre-intro. We haven't officially run his.
Oh, see, I thought I was running late, and so I was just jumping in here.
No.
Should I just sort of back away?
Cranked him up today.
I haven't stopped since my first meeting was at 7 o'clock this morning, and I've gone from meeting to meeting to meeting, and haven't stopped. It was either have my last meeting or have lunch, and I said, I'll have my last meeting. I'll eat later. So, yeah, so this is just me sort of not coming to temperature yet.
Okay.
All right.
This is a very unusual time where you didn't bring a brewer with you.
I didn't. You know, I had chatted with someone about bringing them, and I believe last night as I was reviewing my notes that I had never actually sent the follow-up email. So I'm gonna take that on myself and own that, and I'll have somebody with me in a couple of weeks. But, you know what, I thought it would be nice to just hang out, just the three of us.
Well, but see, you can carry it. Not everybody could, you know, so you can, you know, easily do that.
Oh, I appreciate
it. If you do that more often, that's fine too. Although we love all the people you've brought in have been
very interesting,
very well spoken, yes, very informative, and you know I'm taking a greater interest in
craft beer.
In craft beer,
it's funny you should mention that because here in my handy man purse, I just happen to have a can of craft beer.
Boom sauce. I wonder if Rex Trailer had any. Oh, that was Boomtown. Sorry.
So this is a brand new beer from a brewery in Woburn, Massachusetts. Just opened up in the last couple of months, called Lord Hobo Brewing Company, and this is one of their offerings. I was in just outside of Boston, just Tuesday of this week, dropping off a few friends at Logan, and we passed by a packy that had a big marquee outside and said, all dance competitions must be registered beforehand.
I saw that on Facebook.
And I said, I'm intrigued. I just on face value, I need to walk in and establish it and find out what's going on. I said, do you have a big problem with dance competition? You know, I'm thinking like Turbo and Ozone out front, like, you know, like in a 1983 breakdancing movie, people laying cardboard out in the parking lot. But he said, no, just the owners have a good sense of humor and they like to grab people's attention. I said, well, got me in the door. Served its purpose, so I had to buy something.
So it's at about a 20-ounce can?
It says 16, I think.
16?
That's kind of becoming the standard in craft brewing.
So what'd you pay for that? Because craft beer is not cheap.
I bought a 4-pack, and I want to say the 4-pack was $15. So $3.50 a beer. Mm-hmm. I don't really go to bars very often. I would happily pay $3.50 for a pint of good beer at a bar.
Okay.
I would rather drink at home because I think the experience is better because I like my house. And so I'll pay $3.50 for a pint.
You like your house because you're never there.
Well, yeah, I know, right? But when I get there, I am there.
Yeah.
So I actually tried one of these from the first batch. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, JT from Smutty Nose, gave me one a couple of weeks ago. And it seemed like they had a couple of kinks to work out. Still a good beer, but I'm really looking forward to trying this one.
Cool.
I figured I'd bring it here to share with you two.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
So I guess we'll have to get some cups when we have a commercial break.
Maybe it's break time, and then we'll have the official Michael Hopley Pierce
boom sauce.
Yeah, intro.
Can't wait.
I'm up for some boom sauce to redilate my pupils.
And in the second hour, we'll be tasting high-end wines.
Oh, you're so welcome to stick around for that.
Wow.
Beer
and the third
and
hour, someone's
going
to show up with easy chairs and
we got the couch right there.
Right. Okay.
All right. You're listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break. We'll. I'm sorry, I didn't see that. We have Kevin from New Boston. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, sorry to bother you guys today, but you guys have someone that's near and dear to my heart as far as what he does for brewing.
Who is this?
This is, I'm bad on names, so really, don't ask me who I'm talking to.
Oh, this is Michael Helpley Pierce, I'm sorry. This is MHP.
Michael. We actually, this year, for the first time, planted hops.
Oh, nice.
Curiosity, what are we talking about as far as our next step? Right now, they're all about 15 foot high, 14
okay.
foot.
Wow.
So, yeah, well, we got them trestled up onto some cross pieces. But my question is, when do we go about trying to harvest it, and what am I looking for?
So you have cones on the vines right now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Big buds or cones, whatever you want to call them, yeah.
There's two things you want to make sure of. The first is you want to make sure that you've actually got some lupulin. So that's the sort of orange powder. If you pull one of the hop cones apart, it's down where the leaves meet each other. And that's what's going to give you most of your flavors. Yeah, it looks like pollen, exactly. That's where most of the flavor and the aroma is. So that's the first thing. You don't want to pick them until you've got that. And then they're gonna feel sort of soft and pliable, almost like they're slightly damp paper. You don't want to pick them yet at that point. When they start to get dry and paper, that's when you want to start to pick them.
dry and papery when we want. Okay.
Yeah, but you don't want them to start to turn totally brown, which can happen in a hurry. And sometimes if you have multiple plants, they won't all come to term at the same point. So keep an eye on them. And I had four that produced cones this year, and they weren't all ready on the same day. And they're all the same variety from the same mother stock on the same wall with the same exposure and everything.
Yeah. All right, because we've got some right now that the reason I'm bringing this up, I was out there last night, and they're actually what I would start saying, you know, they're getting to the ripe stage. They're kind of starting to turn color.
Okay. You definitely want to pick them before they turn totally brown, because once they do that, they're going to start to lose flavor and aroma rapidly.
Okay, well then, I guess I'm going to be busy tonight.
What I would do is if you've got a warm spot in an attic or above the rafters in your garage, someplace that's not stinky, and if you have a screen, like we take our screens off in getting towards the fall because we don't need them on the windows, take those hop cones and spread them out on a screen. And let them dry in a warm place that's got a little bit of air circulation. I've tried using a dehydrator, and I think it's got too much air going through it because it seemed like it pulled a lot of the flavor and aroma out of the hops. They dried quick, and they were okay, but they weren't as punchy as I expected them to be. So this year, I actually just used the dehydrator trays, and I dried them without any hot air going through them. And it seemed like they came out good. I only got about a quart this year. I didn't get a lot of hop cones this year for my four plants that actually yielded anything.
And that was part of the other question. What is a viable amount to look at? You know, I mean, I guess you can brew and just adjust the batch to whatever, but what would you say is
I would make sure that I just use them for late addition. I wouldn't use them for bittering because you have no idea what the alpha acid content is, so you don't know what the bittering potential is. So I would say whatever you're using for late addition hops for flavor and aroma, you know, anything from 30 minutes down to the end of the boil, use what you would normally use, an ounce, 2 ounces, 3 ounces, depending on how flavor forward you like your beer. But I wouldn't count on them for any bittering potential because you just have no idea where they are.
Right, and don't know how the soil reacted with them.
Right.
Hey, Kevin, do you have your TV on in the background?
No, I'm actually on Elm Street, but over at St. Mary's Bank.
I think we're getting audio out of Michael Hopley Pierce's pocket.
Phone talking to us?
Yeah. I thought Kevin had...
I was wondering where that was coming from.
Sounded like he had Jerry Springer on in the background. But all right, we got to run, Kevin. Always good to hear from you.
Thanks, Kevin.
And I've got one of your canning jars here whenever you guys are downtown to pick it up.
We're making up some new applesauce, so we'll probably drop you off a full one in replace of the empty one.
All right, sounds fair. Thanks. Always good to hear from you, pal.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break. We'll be right back with MHP Untapped.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse. It must be Thirsty Thursday because Food for Thought is about to pour you a liquid lunch with MHP Untapped. Hang out with us while we talk with brewers and beer movers and shakers, discuss New Hampshire beer culture and events, and answer calls to our studio live at 866-823-1077. And now, Carol and Mike bring you MHP Untapped.
I love that intro. I just never get tired of that.
He's so funny.
Kind of anticlimactic, though, after having you in for 10 minutes.
I know. Hey, I'm really here now. That was just like a simulacrum before. This is the real me. And my stunt double.
The audio we heard was coming out of his pocket.
It was. I'm sorry.
I knew that.
I wasn't just happy to be here. There was a podcast in my pocket. I turned my phone off because I was done listening to the podcast in the car, and I popped it in my pocket, but somehow my glutes seem to have activated the podcast again. I glute dialed.
Well, that's a new one.
Figured that was FCC approved, you know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's cool.
So I think we should crack into this boom sauce right now. What do you guys think?
Boom sauce. All right, boom sauce. Where, you say they're out of Woburn, or that's where you bought it?
These guys are out of Woburn yet. I bought this, I think I was in Watertown.
Because the Woburn water wasn't all that great about 20 years ago, so I'm...
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they were... A lot of breweries will actually use reverse osmosis and strip it right back to pure water and then add whatever salts they want to get the profile.
Another beer out of Boston is using... They made a big deal out of it, the water from the Charles River. And you probably saw that a couple of weeks ago.
I didn't.
I cannot recall who it was connected with. I don't know if it was a Sam product or who it was, but it was a name that I'd heard before, and they made a big deal out of, we're taking water out of the Charles River, and I'm going, hope you're doing the reverse osmosis thing.
Yeah,
which I'm sure they are.
Maybe irradiating it too. I don't know. Well, I guess the Charles used to be a really dirty river, but for
I still wouldn't
major
wanna.
Metropolitan rivers, I think I just saw a list where it was either number two or number one as far as clean big city rivers in the country.
It could very well be.
I still don't want to drink it.
Bend over on my knees.
Yeah, people say Newfound Lake is one of the cleanest lakes in the country, but didn't they just find a couple of feet floating in that a few years ago?
Like,
let's be honest here, people. It's all
you
relative,
were just there,
right?
Were you, Carol?
Yeah.
Anything wash ashore that
I
was odd?
I didn't hear that. Really?
That was probably 5-6 years ago.
Ooh.
There was two of them, and they didn't match. So right now there's two people walking arm in arm, just sort of doing a sack race around Newfound Lake.
Listeners, we haven't even cracked the beer yet.
Right?
And then we're doing wine after 1 o'clock.
This is one coffee, people. That's it.
Okay, so this is Boom Sauce.
This is Boom Sauce. Right. I don't know much about these guys. I've not spoken to this brewery.
Right. Is it a dark beer?
I think it's an IPA.
I love the can. I love the color on the can.
Yeah, it's
kind of a gunmetal gray.
Ooh.
With accents of gold and white in the lettering.
So this is a 16-ounce can, which is... it's kind of becoming the standard in craft brew. I think 22 ounces is a bit much for a lot of people to drink in one sitting. Right. And 16 ounces is a little bit more manageable.
It smells nice.
Optimum temperature for beer delivery is?
Well, it kind of depends on the style of beer. For a pale or an IPA, I would want it on the cooler side, so 45. I don't think I'd want it much colder than that. I know
that's
a lot
cooler
of,
than white wine.
A lot of bars will serve their beer at 38, and I think a little closer to 45 is probably my comfort zone for a pale or hop forward beer. But then something like what we had 2 weeks ago, we had that old ale. I would actually prefer that at more like 55.
That was great.
I
had the caramel flavors.
That was good.
That was sensational.
Because the warmer it gets, the more the flavors come out.
Of course.
That's why people serve, you know, the American light lager style beers ice cold in frosted glasses, because you don't really want to taste what little flavor is actually there.
So a Bud Light at 38 degrees is one thing, but...
I would have a Bud... Actually, I wouldn't have a Bud Light.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I had to have one, I would probably want it at like 32.1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I would want the mountains blue on that course. So, Carol, what do you think?
I love the smell of it. I haven't tasted it yet.
Something floating in mine.
Come on.
Just pull it out. It's a bug.
Okay.
A bug?
Just a little extra protein.
Maybe,
you're not going to take
looks
it
like
out?
It might be a cricket.
What's this bug doing in my beer? Looks
the
like
backstroke.
A backstroke. Hey! Enjoy the chicken. I'll be here all week. So, this is a blend of three... of our New England-style hoppy ales that will wrap you in gently carbonated juice.
Not doing it for you, Carol?
Too bitter?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm learning to tailor what I bring in to more match up with your tastes. This is definitely a little more bitter than a lot of commercial brews.
I like it. I can't put my finger on why I do. It doesn't seem exceptional one way or the other, except the flavors are really vivid.
Very vivid.
This is pretty malty for an IPA. Generally, the hops are the predominant flavor in an IPA, and kind of depending if it's sort of English-influenced or American-influenced, the maltiness can be more or less, but it seems like New England IPAs generally are not as malty as I like them. And this is more malty than I'm used to. I like it. I like this beer a lot.
Yeah, so you bought a four-pack?
I bought a four-pack, and I had a couple of friends in from out of town. They were up for the New England Homebrewers Jamboree, which we just had this past weekend, and I had two friends from, actually one from high school, one from college, fly out from California and North Carolina, and went to the festival, and actually they got in late Thursday night. I think I got home from Logan at 3 a.m. Flight got delayed by 4 hours by that big lightning storm Thursday night, and then we left about 9 a.m. the next morning to head up to Tamworth. Stayed up there all weekend. Monday we went to Portland.
I saw all the beer you bought in Portland.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Is that a really good brew town?
It is, and I looked up Portland breweries thinking I was going to have like 5 or 6 to choose from, and I think I found 12.
Yeah. It looks like you bought one from each place.
Quite a few. We only we visited two breweries and a meadery, but then we visited a couple of package stores as well. And then we went to Boston yesterday when I dropped them, or Tuesday when I dropped them off at Logan. And so I bought a four-pack of this, and I gave one of to each of my buddies and a couple of other. They each came out with 12 beers, respectively, in their suitcases. They each had all their clothes in their carry-on bags, and each of them had a completely independent, no co-planning. They had their suitcases full of beer that they brought me. One brought me 12 homebrews because he's a homebrewer, and the other brought me 12 North Carolina beers that you can't get in New England because he's from North Carolina. So I had to send them back with some stuff. So this is some of what they went back with.
Cool.
So talk a little bit more about Portland and the state of brewing in Maine, which is, you know, I see Maine and Vermont mentioned when craft brews are talked about. I don't see New Hampshire yet, but I think we're getting there.
Well, and I think that the whole farm-to-table mentality is a big piece of that. Definitely in Vermont, and I think to somewhat of a lesser degree, but not much of a lesser degree in Maine, the farm-to-table mentality and the idea that buying local was more important than just something you could brag to your friends about. I think that took a hold in Vermont and Maine earlier than it did here in New Hampshire. And we buy local, but I can tell you as somebody who sold in Maine from New Hampshire, it takes a long time before they want to talk to a Flatlander about any kind of monetary exchange. And I think they realize that it's their neighbors because they're, you know, there's a lot of agriculture happening in Maine, and those people wouldn't be able to make their mortgages or send their kids to school if their neighbors weren't buying what they were growing. So I think that whole buy local, keep it local mentality really helped the local craft brewers become embraced by the community. And you see at breweries in Vermont and Maine, you see people that you wouldn't normally expect to see at a brewery in New Hampshire necessarily. You know, somebody that you might easily judge a book by its cover and say, oh, you know, this guy's got, you know, dirty overalls and a John Deere baseball cap and he's standing in line for craft beer. He's not buying a Budweiser. And so I think it's more about that those folks want to take care of the local businesses and keep them thriving than that they're so much into craft beer per se. But the smart craft breweries make beer for everybody. They're going to make a beer that's going to appeal to somebody who drinks the 30 kit beer, the light yellow beer. They're going to make something for those folks. They're going to make a cream ale, or they're going to make a blonde ale, or they're going to make a Kolsch or something that's going to be accessible to those folks. And I think New Hampshire's starting to get more on board with that. We're seeing more and more of the farm to table kind of restaurants come into the scene. And I think that's a piece of that whole mentality that leads to people wanting to support a craft brewery, especially one in their own town.
We talked yesterday with the woman who's in charge of the New Hampshire Farmers Market Association, Jane Lang, and she is of the opinion that the whole farmers market and I think farm-to-table movement kind of was born in this state, first on the seacoast, and then kind of found its way back to the rest of the state. I'm wondering if there was more craft brewing activity going on, and I suspect there was in the seacoast area than there was the rest of the state initially.
Well, Smutty Nose has been there for
20 years, right?
19 or 20 years. Yeah. Red Hook's been there for, I think, at least as long as I've been here, which is 17 years. So there were certainly some good-sized breweries on the seacoast. And maybe because the seacoast is almost more an extension of southern coastal Maine as far as, you know, their mentality. They're more like coastal Maine folks than they are like central New Hampshire folks, I think, as far as how they look at the world. You know, you go to a town like Portsmouth, and you're not going to find a town like Portsmouth elsewhere in New Hampshire. You're not going to find it on a 93 corridor. There's cool towns, but they're not quite like that. And so I could see that certainly coming from the coast. And it's a booming scene right now. A lot of the coastal breweries in New Hampshire, I think, would more associate themselves with the southern Maine breweries, the Kittery, the York, the even up to Portland, as sort of being in the same scene, because I think they're vying for a lot of the same market.
You brought up some Massachusetts beer from Woburn, Boom Sauce, that we're enjoying right now. What is the state of craft brewing to our south?
Well, we are. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think we're at close to 45 breweries in the state at this point. We're at a point where I couldn't name them all if I had all day to think about it. There are folks that I've never even heard of. There are certainly folks that I haven't met. It's certainly an interesting place to be. I think we're going to continue to see New Hampshire craft beer expand as the pie grows, because the pie is growing. I was actually at an interesting event for a Young Professionals Association at Millie's Tavern right down the street a few nights ago. And one of the folks there asked a question about when was the bubble going to burst. And is it inevitable? Well, of course it is, because anything that's got growth can only grow until it, you know, the fish can only get as big as its bowl. But I think in this case, the bowl is growing because people are deciding they want more flavor from their beer, or they're just leaving the marketplace because they stop drinking or they pass away or whatever it is. And the folks that are coming in on the other end, the 21-year-olds, their dads probably drank craft beer. Their moms probably drank craft beer if they drank beer at all. You didn't see that 20 years ago. So I think the percentage of folks that are coming of age, a higher percentage of them are drinking craft beer than are drinking American lagers. And that's really where the growth is happening. I don't think that 50, 60, 70-year-olds, even 40-year-olds who drink lager are all of a sudden deciding they're going to want to drink craft beer. Maybe that's happening, but I don't think that's the big piece. I think the big piece is that
critical is a 19 to 26 year old demographic that's entering the marketplace, and they don't start at Bud Light. They start with something like Boom Sauce.
So the millennials are you know, they're pretty much owning it.
I think so. They're definitely helping to drive the business. They're helping to drive the growth. I think craft beer people are always going to be craft beer people, but I think the new folks coming into the market are the ones that are really helping drive the growth. And I don't see that changing for any reason. So eventually we will reach a point where the people my age are 70 and the whole marketplace is at least somewhat craft beer drinkers. And maybe then there'll be a bubble. But until then, there's plenty of opportunity. And so much of it is local. There are so many of these breweries that don't look to expand beyond their own reach. You know, they only want to service a couple of zip codes. They only want to sell beer out of their brew pub and maybe one or two other locations, and they can sustain their business and their lifestyle that way. And that's really pre-prohibition. That's how things were, was you had a neighborhood brewery and they made, just like it is in England now, where you had a local, you had your local brewery, and they probably only serviced a 5 or a 10 mile radius, however far they could get with their, you know, cart and their horse. And really the beer wasn't keeping and there wasn't refrigeration. So they had to get it out fairly quick. So they had to keep it kind of local, and that was what you drank. And I think we're seeing that business model is sustainable again. And it's not everybody. There are certainly people that are looking at huge growth, but I think a lot of folks just want to make beer for their neighborhood.
Well, we should probably take a break. I want to follow up on the hops conversation that you had a few moments ago with Kevin from New Boston. Have something I want to ask you about that.
Sure.
So we'll continue on. It's Carol and Mike, Food for Thought, The Pulse, 107.7 WTPL. Be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Quarter one, 107.7 WTPL. It's Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, brought to you by Healthy Solutions Spice Blends, spiceblends.com. Also, Ipswich Clam Bake on 2nd Street, Manchester, ipswichclambake.com. And Red Arrow Diner, Manchester, Milford, and Londonderry, redarrowdiner.com.
And we're back, and we are in-house with MHP on tap. That is Michael Haupley-Pierce. We're talking beer, and we're tasting Boom Sauce, which I said initially that I really didn't care for it, but it's starting to grow on me. And like you stated, you know, it's getting a little warmer, so the flavors are coming out. Because like I said, I really like the smell of it, and it wasn't matching the taste at first, but now it's kind of matching.
Nice and citrusy, kind of almost a little bit of grapefruit, a little tangerine.
Yeah, there. I couldn't put my finger on it. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin from New Boston called a few moments ago. He has, you know, he's got an interesting garden, and they do a lot of canning. They were on the show a few weeks ago, and I didn't realize that he had some hop vines going on. And I just saw something. I just caught a piece of it, so I don't have all the details. But it was, I think, Chronicle or somebody doing, maybe it was Chronicle Massachusetts, doing a piece on that hops are really becoming a big agriculture segment, or increasing in Vermont. And I suppose that would apply to the state as well. I think Vermont, though, maybe has a bit of an edge on that.
You know, from a climate and terrain standpoint, I don't know which would be better. The best hop growing areas in the United States tend to be in the Pacific Northwest. So Yakima Valley, Willamette Valley, Washington, Oregon, they sort of have that
cool, like, and moist,
a micro terrain that, you know, a microclimate that's very conducive to growing hops. But the different varieties really are happy in different, you know, different terroirs. I know upstate New York used to be pretty big for hop growing a couple of hundred years ago. Some varieties don't grow very well in New Hampshire. Chinook seems to grow pretty well. Centennial seems to grow pretty well. That's what I've got in my yard.
So this is all different kinds of hops, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's,
I have no clue.
There's hundreds of kinds of hops.
Really?
Yeah. Some of them are really, really old, you know, where there's records going back to the 12 and 1300s, where the traditional German, what they call the noble hops or the landrace hops, like Hallertauer and Spalt and Tettnang.
So where would you get something like that to start growing in your yard?
Hops are, I always forget what the term is. In animals, they would call it sexual dimorphism, but there's another name in plants where there's boys and girls. So
like holly bushes.
Like holly bushes, mm-hmm. I guess. There are only female plants out, because if there are male plants out, then they'll pollinate and then the cones will go to seed. So they're all propagated by vine cuttings, root cuttings, a rhizome. And they're generally, you can buy them from homebrew supply shops, or you can sometimes buy them directly from the companies that grow them. And they're usually about as big as a pencil, and you plant them, and 2 to 3 years later, you'll have a plant that's big enough to get cones because they die down every year. So they'll grow, they'll throw a vine up, you know, 10 feet the first year. And then they'll, towards the end of their life cycle that year, they'll send all the sugar back to the root ball and then they'll die down to the ground. And the next year they'll have a much bigger root ball so it can send up a more powerful vine that year. And second or third year, you'll start to get cones on them.
All right. So when you said it was a rhizome, much like grass, does that mean it will spread?
Absolutely.
With roots underneath and eventually more come up and then you just continue to stake them, to string them, the whole deal.
Yep. In fact, I've got one plant that's a Hallertau from Bert Bingle at Bert's Better Beers. And I think he said his root ball is about 30 years old. So he'll just dig it up and he'll cut pieces off of it or cut it into separate pieces and then replant it because it'll get just too much where you get 50 vines trying to come up from the same square foot of soil.
Right. It's kind of like a friendship bread where you get the initial dough sponge and you put it in and you make some and you put some of the thing aside and you give it to a friend. You give them part of the sponge.
I hate when I get those.
But some of them supposedly are thousands of years old.
Yeah,
and I suppose if you could document it, you could prove it. But it's interesting. If you're smart, you can get that root ball and run with it.
And we're starting to see that there's now, that it's one of the ancillary industries that the growth of craft beer is really driving the growth of. And obviously this show would be another example of that. But even more directly, there's maltsters, the people that take grain and turn it into malt. So they sprout it and kiln it. And sometimes they roast it to get darker colors out of it. There's one of those in Hadley, Massachusetts that opened up about 4 years ago. And there's another one just opened up just outside of Portland. And you're starting to see hop growers. The big problem with hop growers is that they couldn't process their product into something that could actually get it out to the marketplace because it's got to be dried, kilned kind of quickly at a very specific temperature, and then it's got to be flushed with nitrogen so that it doesn't have any oxidation, and it's got to be vacuum sealed so that none of the aroma escapes, and then it's got to be frozen. And it's not a cheap process to make happen, and the infrastructure can easily cost you millions of dollars to build a facility that can process even small quantities of hops. So a company called Isinglass, I don't know if they're up and running yet, but they were working on opening up a hop processing plant in the seacoast that was going to be able to process local hops and serve the local market.
You will become an official brewer yourself early next year.
Yeah.
Where will you get your hops from? Have you figured that out?
Well, no. I will probably buy from one of the big local clearinghouses, but there's hops that you can readily get. And then there's hops that you can't readily get. So some of the newer cool kids on the block, Simcoe, Citra, Galaxy, those are actually owned. Their genome is owned. And because they're propagated by rhizomes, nobody gets them unless they want to give them. And if they don't give them to anybody, then they control the acreage. So there's only certain amounts of some of these really cool new hops available. Generally, people pre-buy those. So you would be buying 2017, 2018, 2019
Can
right
you imagine
now.
That?
And you would prepay, and they would warehouse them for you as they were harvested and ship them to you as you needed them. But some hops you can actually get on what they call the spot market. So if I wanted to get Chinook hops, which are not the new kid on the block and not all the rage, I can get those for $7.50 a pound wholesale kind of anytime I want to. I probably have to buy them at 44 pounds at a time to get that price point. But I could buy them for $9 a pound if I bought a pound at a time. But if I wanted to get Simcoe right now, I would have either had to buy it 3 years ago or I'm going to pay $35 a pound and it's a 44-pound minimum.
Whoa. So do we find hops on the commodity market like we would pork bellies or corn?
I don't think they're openly traded that way, but I wouldn't be very surprised to see that happen.
I would think so.
And people do buy futures. So I guess to an extent, yes, you are buying your projected usage 2, 3, 4 years out. And if you have excess, you can always sell it to somebody else or you can sell it back to the company that bought it from you in some cases because they know, well, they charged you $12 a pound 3 years ago, but now on the spot market, it's $35 a pound because these are brewers that have to make this beer and they have to use that hop to do it. And if the only place they can get it is a spot market from you, then it's kind of what the market will bear.
So what's the problem with the Chinook hops? Of course, Chinook, the dog's native to this state.
Yes.
So tell me about that, where it comes in the spectrum of flavor and desirability.
I'm a big fan of it. In fact, we've got all my beer names for my brewery are all musical bad puns generally. And because the Chinook is the New Hampshire state dog and our IPA does use that hop, we actually call it Bow Wow Yippee Yo IPA. Yep.
I love
it. Of course
it.
You do.
Yeah, can't make this stuff up. Actually, yeah. I guess I can. I just did.
Yeah.
So I would put it in kind of what they call the C-hop category, which is Cascade, Columbus, Centennial, Chinook. They're all Pacific Northwest in origin, so they were probably developed in Washington or Oregon, probably in the 60s or 70s, and maybe didn't make it to the marketplace until the 80s. But they've got the sort of combination of the citrusy and the piney notes to them. So it might be everything from what we've got in this one, where it's mostly, you know, tangerine and grapefruit, to pine, pine tar, pine cone. Whereas the German hops are going to probably be a little bit more on the spicy side of the hop aroma realm. And the English hops are going to be a little bit more on the earthy side. And the New Zealand hops are going to be more on the tropical fruit side. And these are all, you know, real generalizations. But that seems to be the sort of categorical statement you can make about the different groups of hops.
I know, that's crazy, huh? That is, like, huge. I never knew, well, really any of that. I find that really...
So if I were to buy 5 or 10 acres of desirable farm property somewhere in the state, I maybe could make a go of it if I wanted to just devote it to hops and cater to the state brewers.
The big problem you would have is as you got beyond, if you got to the volume that would actually be sustainable financially, then how do you harvest them?
Yeah, got to pay a lot of people to do
that. Well, they're 18 feet tall. I mean, they have specialized trucks that run down the aisles.
There's a lot of retired
rows,
NBA people.
Right?
Hey, Shaquille.
Hey, Magic Johnson. Yeah.
How's your vertical leap?
18 feet tall?
18 feet tall.
You see them on those strings.
Wow. Yeah, right. Okay. Cool.
Well, you're done, buddy.
All right. I'm shut off.
Take your Yippee-Ki-Yay and get the heck out of here.
Well, it was great to be here. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
I'll come back and get insulted again in a few weeks.
Thanks for the boom sauce.
Anytime.
Yeah, very good. All right. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and speak with Linda Ditch of What's Cooking in Kansas. And then a little bit right after that, Craig Pierce from Martinetti. We're going to try some high-end wines next. We'll be right back.